top stories. Russia says Syria's air defenses shot down 7 out of 8 missiles launched by Israeli warplanes during a Monday airstrike on Aleppo province. Britain announces the permanent deployment of 2 warships in East Asian waters amid growing tensions between the West and China. And a close ally of former U.S. President Donald Trump is arrested and charged with illegal lobbying on behalf of the UAE. Welcome to the program. Newly revealed data shows Syria's air defenses shot down 7 out of 8 missiles launched by Israeli warplanes during a Monday airstrike on Aleppo province. According to the Russian military, 4 Israeli F-16 fighter jets targeted facilities southeast of Aleppo in the attack. The military said the Syrian anti-air units used Pantsir-S and the Buk-M2 systems supplied by Russia. One missile damaged a building of a scientific research center in Al-Safira region. Earlier, a Syrian military official also confirmed the country's air defenses shot down most of the missiles shot in the airstrike. Over the past years, Israel has carried out hundreds of attacks on Syria, leaving civilian casualties at times. Damascus has repeatedly protested to the UN, condemning the attacks as a breach of its sovereignty. New reports reveal the names and titles of more than a dozen world leaders whose phones may have been compromised by the Israeli-made Pegasus spyware. French daily Le Monde reported that President Emmanuel Macron and 15 members of his government were targeted for surveillance by Morocco's intelligence service. Morocco has denied any involvement. Washington Post reported that the phone of Iraq's President Barham Saleh was also targeted. Kazakhstan's current president and prime minister, a circle of people that is close to the current president of Mexico, and both the king and prime minister of Morocco have been on a list of more than 50,000 people targeted by the spyware. Pegasus is also believed to have been used to target journalists and human rights activists. The UK says it will permanently deploy 2 warships to disputed waters in the South China Sea amid growing tensions between Beijing and the West. During a joint announcement with his Japanese counterpart, British Defense Minister Ben Wallace said the deployment will take place later on this year. Wallace added that Britain will also sail a carrier strike group through the Chinese-claimed waters, that is, in September. China and a number of other Asian countries, including Vietnam and the Philippines, lay overlapping claims on the strategic waterway. In the past months, tensions have flared between Beijing and the West over this issue. Investigative journalist Tony Gosling believes that the UK is deliberately pursuing a confrontational and provocative policy toward China.
The idea of projecting British power over to the South China Sea is very much like the Chinese sailing battleships, aircraft carriers up and down the River Thames. It's not really, the idea is not to be friendly to your foreign power. It's actually quite a provocative thing to do. The British, I think, are just simply part of the US strategy to have a confrontation with China. If anyone remembers about 3 years ago, John Pilger came out with a brilliant documentary, maybe 4 years ago actually, called The Coming War on China. And his prognosis, I think, was absolutely spot on. Brilliant journalist, hardly ever seen or heard in the Western press at all, even though he's one of the greatest journalists there's ever been. And The Coming War on China explains that the West, it looks like it's losing the economic war, and so it's going to go towards a much more provocative potential shooting war in order to try and intimidate China.
Tensions between the U.S. and China have escalated in recent weeks. The two top economies remain at odds over a host of issues. The division has grown to a new height amid U.S. allegations that the Chinese government was behind a massive cyber attack on key Microsoft servers earlier this year, as well as a global espionage campaign.
There seems to be no end in sight to the tensions between the United States and China. In the latest development, the U.S. and some of its Western allies, including the U.K., have publicly accused actors affiliated with the Chinese government of hacking Microsoft Exchange, an email platform used by corporations. That has escalated the already tense relations between Washington and Beijing, with the Chinese foreign ministry slamming it as, quote, fabricated allegation.
The U.S. has mustered its allies to carry out unreasonable criticism against China on the issue of cybersecurity. This move is fabricated out of nothing, confuses right and wrong, and is an act of smearing and oppression that's wholly motivated by political purposes. China will never accept.
For years, the U.S. and China have been at loggerheads over issues ranging from trade, Hong Kong and Taiwan, to the South China Sea. Last week, China was infuriated further after the U.S. administration warned American companies and investors about the increasing risk of operating in Hong Kong. Washington claimed that those companies face multiple threats, including the Chinese government's ability to gain access to data foreign firms store there. The South China Sea is yet another bone of contention, with the U.S. routinely sending its warships, citing its right to freedom of navigation. The U.S. has no claim over the strategic waters, but it misses no chance to play with the sentiment of other countries having maritime stake over there. The UK, a major US ally, is also not far behind. London has now announced it would permanently deploy two warships to Asian waters. That despite China's constant warning to the US and its allies over their military activities in the region. It seems the US and its allies are concerned about China's growing influence around the globe. That was visible in a recent G7 meeting where the leaders of seven wealthy nations agreed to counter China's economic and security influences. U.S. President Joe Biden even urged European and Japanese leaders to offer hundreds of billions in loans to developing countries in a direct challenge to Belt and Road Initiative, which is China's global infrastructure development strategy. Beijing's relations with Washington reached the lowest ebb during the administration of President Donald Trump, who waged a tariff war on it. China had hoped for an improvement in relations under Trump's successor Joe Biden, but he has shown no sign of discontinuing on his predecessor's hardline policies toward China. That has helped bring the Asian powerhouse closer to Russia, with both forming an invisible alliance. Biden will probably face a nightmare scenario given deepening ties and strategic cooperation between China and Russia, the countries Washington sees as a threat to its global hegemony.
The United States says it has conducted an airstrike on Al-Shabaab militants in Somalia. The Pentagon said the U.S. Military Command for Africa carried out the air raid near the central city of Galkayo in coordination with the Somali government. The U.S. Department of Defense said its initial assessments showed no civilians were killed or injured in the attack. The U.S. conducts such strikes in mostly Muslim-majority nations, claiming it's targeting that as terrorist elements. However, local sources say civilians have been the main victims of the attacks. And now, a close ally of former U.S. President Trump has been arrested and charged with illegal lobbying on behalf of the United Arab Emirates. Federal prosecutors said Thomas Barak said or failed to register as a lobbyist and used his influence to advance the UAE's foreign policy goals in the U.S. Barak is also charged or alleged to have repeatedly lied during an FBI interview about his dealings with the UAE. He is a longtime Trump ally and was chairman of his 2017 inaugural committee. He is the latest in a long line of Trump associates to face criminal charges, including his former campaign chair, his former chief strategist, and his former personal lawyer. Earlier, we were joined by our Washington, D.C. correspondent, Colin Campbell, who gave us more details about the case.
Barrack was also a person who helped fund the inauguration committee for the Trump presidency. And he's a billionaire and a hedge fund manager, a person who has access to lots of money. And of course, with that access comes influence. And what investigators are alleging is that Barrack was a top influencer when it came to UAE policy during the Trump administration, which could have also influenced the former president's policies when it came to the United Arab Emirates. And as we know, there's lots of controversy over the U.S.'s relationship with the UAE, especially when it comes to arms deals and diplomatic accords. Barrack will be facing most likely a grand jury in all of this. Of course, it's still too early to tell how this will all play out. But what we do see and what we are observing is a shrinking of the former president's inner circle as more people are being arrested who worked directly with the president.
Anti-government protesters hit the streets of the Colombian capital of Bogota as President Iván Duque offers his renewed tax reforms bill to the Congress. Clashes also broke out between protesters and police. The protest was called by a group representing indigenous people, trade unions, and students. Similar rallies were held in other cities across the country. Protesters voiced skepticism about the government's promises to improve working conditions for young people in the new proposal. The bill seeks to boost the government's income by nearly $4 billion yearly. Nationwide protests have been held in Colombia since 2019 over the tax reform plan, police brutality, and social injustice. More than 60 people died in the demonstrations. Divisions deepen within the European Union over claims that several of the bloc's member states continue to flout the rule of law. Poland and Hungary have been singled out for particular criticism in the European Commission's annual rule of law report. Jerome Hughes is in Brussels.
Poland's Prime Minister Mateusz Morawiecki and the EU's executive arm, the European Commission, are on a collision course. The Commission is demanding that Warsaw adheres to a recent EU Court of Justice ruling that Poland's disciplinary procedure for judges violates EU law.
We will ask for financial sanctions if Poland does not remedy the situation by the 16th of August. Let me repeat that we have said many times, EU law has primacy over national law.
The Commission has just published its 2021 EU Rule of Law report. It highlights concerns surrounding justice systems and corruption. The Commission says it's examining allegations that EU member Hungary has used spyware to hack into the phones of those criticizing Viktor Orban's government.
We will use all the possible tools to receive more information on this. So, of course, at the internal level with the different services of the Commission, we are starting, you mentioned investigations, we are starting to collect information.
Other EU countries criticized in the rule of law report include Bulgaria, Croatia, and Slovenia. Recently, Slovenian Prime Minister Janez Janša participated in the annual conference of the MKO terrorist organization, sometimes referred to as the MEK. The terrorist group wants to oust the democratically elected government in Iran. Via Skype, former Portuguese MEP Ana Gomes says that the group is mainly funded by Saudi Arabia and Israel.
MEK pays people to participate in their events. So my question is, how much has Prime Minister Janša been paid by MEK?
Critics say the EU is quick to apply sanctions on foreign nations over alleged rule of law breaches, but is very slow to take action when some of its own 27 member states flout basic standards. The Commission's annual rule of law report repeatedly highlights the importance of media freedom. It's ironic because the EU's closest ally, the United States, continues to block .com media outlets operated from Iran, including PressTV.com. However, people can still log on using PressTV.ir. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Turkey dismisses as null and void the European Union's criticism of Ankara for deciding to reopen the abandoned Cypriot resort town of Varosha. The Turkish foreign ministry said the bloc has no role to play in the dispute, accusing it of acting as an advocate for the Greek Cypriot region. Ankara also noted that the latest remarks by Brussels show how much the EU is disconnected from reality. The reaction comes after the EU condemned Ankara's move to reopen Varosha as unacceptable, unilateral, and a breach of international law. The bloc's foreign policy chief, Josep Borrell, said the decision could raise tensions in Cyprus. The island of Cyprus has been split between the Greek Cypriot-run Republic of Cyprus and the self-declared Turkish Republic of Northern Cyprus since 1974. Now, at least 169 people are now confirmed dead in the devastating floods in Germany, the country's worst natural disaster in more than half a century. That brings the total number of deaths in Western Europe to at least 200. The death toll could rise. As many people are still unaccounted for, the European flood struck a week ago. The deluge mainly hit Germany's western states as well as parts of Belgium. Entire communities were cut off without power or communications. German government has dismissed criticism about its warning systems. That came after opposition politicians said the number of fatalities from the torrential rains and widespread flooding revealed the failings of Germany's preparedness. And that's it with international news.
Adha, or Feast of the Sacrifice, is a major Islamic holiday celebrating the willingness of Prophet Abraham, peace be upon him, to sacrifice his firstborn son Ishmael as an act of obedience to God's command. We here at Arabi English Radio congratulate all our Muslim listeners on the occasion of Eid al-Adha, the Feast of Sacrifice. Eid Mubarak.
In the limelight.
COVID cases could hit 200,000 a day in the United Kingdom this year and cause major disruption to the National Health Service. According to the scientists whose initial modelling helped shape Britain's coronavirus lockdown strategy, Professor Neil Ferguson said it was almost inevitable that Monday's final phase of unlocking would bring on 100,000 daily cases, with about 1,000 hospitalizations, despite roughly half of the United Kingdom being fully vaccinated. He added that he could foresee a situation in which the case rate expands to twice the size. The article you're about to hear has been written by the Observer's science correspondent Natalie Grover. The piece is titled, UK COVID cases could hit 200,000 a day, says scientists behind lockdown strategy. COVID cases could hit 200,000 a day in the UK this year and cause major disruption to the National Health Service, according to the scientists whose initial modelling helped shape Britain's coronavirus lockdown strategy. Professor Neil Ferguson said it was almost inevitable that Monday's final phase of unlocking would bring on 100,000 daily cases, with about 1,000 hospitalizations, despite roughly half the population of the United Kingdom being fully vaccinated. He added that he could foresee a situation in which the case rate expands to twice the size. "The real question is, do we get to double that or even higher?" he told the BBC on Sunday. "And that's where the crystal ball starts to fail. I mean, we could get to 2,000 hospitalizations a day, 200,000 cases a day, but it's much less certain. Daily hospitalizations surpassing 2,000 a day is equivalent to the level in the week leading up to Christmas. Although people currently being hospitalized do not fall as severely ill and are much less likely to die, Professor Ferguson said that if you have enough cases, you can still have quite significant burden on the healthcare system. Major disruption of services and cancellation of elective surgery and a backlog in the NHS getting longer and longer. Coronavirus infections in the United Kingdom are surging again, and hospitalizations are on the rise, driven by the spread of the Delta variant of the coronavirus and the partial lifting of restrictions. Nearly all restrictions are set to be discarded in England on Monday 19th of July, including mask wearing and social distancing mandates. Whether this unlocking is permanent or temporary will depend on precautions taken by the public and vaccination rates, scientists have warned, adding there would probably be a surge in cases no matter when the remaining restrictions are lifted. Professor Neil Ferguson and his team at Imperial College, University of London, discovered there had been an almost threefold underestimate of the true scale of the level of infections in the country by March of last year, compelling the government to impose a full lockdown on 23rd of March. The colossal upheaval to the British way of life can therefore be traced directly to the modelling carried out over a few days, calculations that would lead to Professor Ferguson being viewed by sections of the British press and public as the figurehead of lockdown. Some scientists have vehemently opposed lifting the remaining restrictions on 19th of July, suggesting the government has decided to achieve herd immunity by effectively letting the virus run wild in young people, which they say will lead to disruption in the National Health Service, NHS care and education. This strategy would also lead to more people suffering from long COVID and raise the risk of new vaccine-resistant variants. Instead, they advise more people should be fully vaccinated before fully unlocking. Although vaccine uptake has weakened the link between infections and hospitalizations and death, it has not severed it. With a high rate of infections, even a small percentage of people being hospitalized and or dying will still be a big number, scientists have stressed. Sage advisors expect 1,000 to 2,000 daily hospital admissions over the summer, after the unlocking, and 100 to 200 deaths per day under what was described as the central scenario. The United Kingdom has one of the highest daily new case rates per million of the population globally, according to Our World in Data project run by the Global Change Data Laboratory, a UK-based non-profit organisation behind only Indonesia and Brazil in the rolling 7-day average of new daily COVID cases. Meanwhile, Boris Johnson's plan to lift England's remaining lockdown restrictions was overshadowed by a furious backlash against the Prime Minister and his Chancellor, Rishi Sunak, on Sunday, 18th of July, triggering a hasty U-turn and prompting questions about a pilot scheme designed to let them avoid isolation. Downing Street was accused of sowing confusion and a sense of one rule for them on the eve of so-called Freedom Day by saying Boris Johnson and Rishi Sunak would continue with essential government business while having daily rapid tests. They about turned less than 3 hours later, with one Whitehall source suggesting the Chancellor put pressure on Number 10 to back down. Sunak knew how this would go down with businesses, which are having to shut because their staff are being pinched, the source said. Boris Johnson, Rishi Sunak and the Health Secretary Sajid Javid are in quarantine, along with more than 1 million people estimated to have been told to self-isolate, as England competes the final stage of reopening and United Kingdom new infection rates climb to among the highest in the world, behind only Indonesia and Brazil. On Sunday night, 18th of July, Downing Street emphasized that measures could return, data will be continually assessed and contingency measures retained if needed during high-risk periods, but restrictions will be avoided if possible, it said. The Prime Minister has been under growing pressure to either bring cases under control or change the rules for isolation, with up to 10 million people expected to be told to self-isolate by mid-August. After Health Secretary Sajid Javid tested positive for the coronavirus on Saturday, 17th of July, Downing Street said Boris Johnson and Rishi Sunak would escape the need for 10 days isolation despite them being contacted by NHS Test and Trace after meeting face-to-face with Health Secretary Sajid Javid. An incensed response from bereaved families and MPs and promises from social media users to delete their COVID-19 apps in protest prompted Number 10 Downing Street to reverse just 2 hours and 37 minutes later. Questions are growing over the workplace pilot scheme, which allows certain government departments and other public bodies to avoid isolating after exposure to COVID, after transport networks said they were not involved in the scheme.
Food for thought.
Hello everyone. May God accept your endeavors for the blessed day of Arafah, the ninth of the month of Zilhijjah. And here is a gem of a saying from Imam Zainul Abidin, peace be upon him, who on hearing a beggar ask for alms on this day said, "Woe unto you for beseeching people rather than God Almighty on this day, on which, if divine blessings were to reach the fetus in the mother's womb, it would be born virtuous."
Is there any other way to get familiar with Islam besides mainstream media? Try IRIB English Radio. log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
تمام ارزش ها و صفاتی که انسان احترام میگذاره، همه این ارزش ها در علی ابن ابی طالب جمعه.
Human in general, whether a Muslim, non-Muslim, or even a disbeliever, respect the values present in the character of Ali ibn Abi Talib.
لا يقيم أمر الله سبحانه إلا من لا يصانع ولا يضارع ولا يتبع المطامع.
Imam Ali alayhi salam, the reason we love him as our hero, or not only in the material sense, in the spiritual sense, in the leadership sense.
Universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam in To My Brother. Imam Ali alayhi salam, the most distinguished and extraordinary personality in Islam after the Holy Prophet Muhammad. His entire life is a struggle for the advancement of Islam, the universal religion prescribed by Allah for all of humanity. Imam Ali alayhi salam was the living miracle raised up by the Holy Prophet Muhammad himself, and was not only the successor and the executor of the Holy Prophet Muhammad, but as history testifies, he was also a great human being, a brave defender of Islam, a just and fair judge, a generous philanthropist, a champion of the people, and the most pious person of his time.
قال أمير المؤمنين علي عليه السلام اتقوا ظنون المؤمنين فإن الله تعالى جعل الحق على ألسنتهم.
Imam Ali stated, "Be afraid of the ideas of the believers, because Allah, the Sublime, has put truth on their tongues." Welcome back, dear friends. It's great to have you with us. This is IRIB English Radio, the programs to my brother, and we were discussing the universal persona of Imam Ali, the son of Abu Talib, alayhi salam. Dear friends, there are some very many great lessons which we learn from the truly universal persona of Imam Ali, alayhi salam. These are beautiful ethical and spiritual statements which, if applied in our lives and implemented in our lives, can truly bring us bliss and prosperity both in this world and the next. So it's interesting, but following the martyrdom of Amir al-Mu'mineen, the commander of the believers, Imam Ali alayhi salam, we find that a man by the name of Dirar ibn Damara says that I headed towards Syria to have a meeting with Muawiyah, who was the governor of Syria at that time. And so when Muawiyah found out that this man, Dirar, was a devotee of Imam Ali alayhi salam, Muawiyah said, "Describe Ali for me." And so Dirar, knowing the well-known enmity of Muawiyah with Imam Ali, said, "Please accept my excuse, for my tongue cannot possibly describe him." But Muawiyah continued, and he said, "Your excuse is not acceptable. You must describe him to me." And so Dirar says, "Now that you refuse to accept my excuse, listen carefully. Ali feared the ornaments and the glamour of this world. He was devoted to the nightly supplications. He pondered on the tumultuous future, and this made him cry ceaselessly. He wore coarse garments, and this was pleasant for him. He loved plain food. He was not pretentious, but was like one of us. If we had any questions, he would pose them to us. If we had any questions, we would pose our questions to him, and Ali would immediately answer. And if we asked Ali for any help, he would immediately help us." Such a simple description of Imam Ali in this report by Dirar ibn Damara, but filled with ethical advice which we can and we should implement in our daily lives. Profound lessons brought to us by the universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam.
IRIB English Radio. You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
ارزش‌ها و صفاتی که انسان چه به عنوان انسان مؤمن به اسلام چه به عنوان انسان مؤمن به هر دینی
human in general whether a muslim non-muslim or even a disbeliever respect the values present in the character of Ali ibn Abi Talib. This means Ali ibn Abi Talib is a global character who is respected by Sunnis, Shias, and even non-Muslims. Everyone, even the faithless people, respect Imam Ali and his personal values.
كل صبح وكل شراب أيام تبقى عيني بدمع مشتاق قد لسعت حية الهوى كبدي فلا تبي ولها ولا راغي
And now we invite you to listen to Sayyid Muhammad Ridvi.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان اللعين الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala in chapter 3 of the Quran in verse number 33 makes an announcement where he says إن الله اصطفى Verily God has chosen Adam and then Nuh and then the family of Abraham and then Imran Alal Alameen, over the rest of the people in the world. When you look at this verse of the Quran, you come to realize that all the human beings have been created by Almighty God, but they are not equal in the eyes of God. As far as their status is concerned, you know, when it comes to the prophets of God, the messengers of God, those who represent Him in conveying His message, they are at a higher, you know, status than other human beings. I would like to take this opportunity to actually talk about the special status that God has given to Ahlul Bayt, the family of the Prophet. Let me go to the issue of, you know, tathir. Tathir means the issue of, you know, infallibility and purity of the Ahlul Bayt. We know the verse of the Quran where Almighty God declared the Ahlul Bayt, the family of the Prophet, to be pure and to be infallible. But this is not only the issue of spirituality. You know, that quality that God has given to them, sometimes it is so powerful that you will see even on physical dimension, the rules will change for them. Now let me, you know, give you an example here, relating it with the event about the Ahlul Bayt. For example, you look at space or place. Not every place is equally sacred. You know, let's start with our own musalla, the prayer rug that we use at home. Normally people fix one area in their room, you know, where they would put their prayer rug, the musalla, to do their daily prayers. In your house, it is your house. Every area, every space there is equal. But once you start praying in that particular spot in your bedroom, or your living room, whatever place you are dedicated for your daily prayers, gradually that space acquired the sacredness which is not there in the other parts of your home. And this is not only a symbolic statement. You know, in our religious teachings we are told that when a person is going through the last stages of life, when they are going through agony of death, and if you see they are kind of suffering during that moment, if they want to seek relief, you know, place that person in the place where he was doing the prayers on the musalla or the area of musalla. That will help that individual to go through this, you know, process of death. And so it means that that space itself acquires a sacredness and it has an impact on individuals in that way. That area in your home with the mosque in your neighborhood, which will be more sacred? Of course, the masjid in your neighborhood would be more sacred. Then compare that, you know, local masajid in different neighborhoods to the major mosque in the region, which is known as the Jami Masjid, where Friday prayers are held in large congregation. That Jami Masjid becomes more sacred than other neighborhood, mosques. And then on a global level, you know, if you look at the mosque which is there in Mecca, known as Masjid al-Haram, that is considered to be the holiest spot for us on this earth. God is everywhere.
You know, technically, I can stand and pray in whatever direction I want. But according to the religious laws, we are told that, yes, God is everywhere. But for your prayers to be valid, you must stand up facing the direction towards the mosque in Mecca. Why? Because that direction acquires its own sanctity and sacredness because of that place known as Masjid al-Haram in Mecca. And then there are other great mosques around the world. You know, after Masjid al-Haram in Mecca, you look at the mosque in Medina, the Prophet's mosque known as Masjid al-Nabi. That is second in importance as far as sacredness is concerned. Then you have this mosque in Iraq, in Kufa, known as Masjid al-Kufa. That is, you know, after the Masjid al-Nabi. And then finally, among the major masajid around the world, you have this Masjid al-Aqsa, which is in Jerusalem. And so although they are all masjid, places of worship, but not all mosques are equal in status.
Dear listeners, we hope you enjoyed this episode of To My Brother. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.com. We leave you in Allah's care. Bye for now.
Ukraine to meet the world's oldest tennis player who has been playing the sport for over half a century. Leonid Stanislavski, now 97 years old, has competed in various world championships. When he was a 30-year-old gymnast, he started training tennis three times a week. The Guinness World Record holder is now practicing for the 2021 Super Seniors World Championship, which will be held in Mallorca, Spain. Stanislavski believes that people can play tennis at any age.
It's an elegant type of sport. It's good physical exercise. It is a beautiful game, and there is one more thing about tennis. You can play tennis no matter what age you are.
The world's oldest tennis player revealed his secret to a long life, a combination of good genes and regular sport. His goal is to live to 100 years old and take on prominent tennis player Roger Federer. The old athlete also wishes to make a parachute jump. The largest museum in the world dedicated to the study of space has made its debut in Shanghai, China. Inspired by the orbits of celestial bodies, the layout of the building has no straight lines or right angles. The museum, designed by New York-based Anid Architects, is intended to create an immersive experience for visitors to engage in a real astronomical phenomenon. For instance, visitors can take a trip into a starry night in the optical planetarium theater.
What we aim to create is a real environment for people to look up to the starry sky. To achieve this goal, we've installed a high-precision planetarium projector at the center of the theater, which can project the sharp spots of stars on the screen with countless optical fibers. The demonstration effects are very vivid.
After moving through the museum's galleries and curved hallways, the final area visitors pass through is the sky space of the Inverted Dome. The viewing area of the Inverted Dome is about reducing almost all separation between people and the stars. The opening follows a 5-year construction process in the city's Linglong district.
The French artist has created a huge cardboard installation in the shape of a hanging bridge. The artwork is 18 meters in length and hovers above Rome's Tiber River with the help of three gigantic helium-filled balloons. Olivier, who created the work, was inspired by famous Italian Renaissance architect and sculptor Michelangelo. The Italian master had been tasked with the constructing a bridge on Tiber to connect the gardens of the Villa Farnesina to the Farnese Palace. However, he died before he could complete the venture. Now Michelangelo's mission has been accomplished centuries after his demise by one of his admirers. Every year, a lot of animals lose their life due to various kinds of accidents, but some of them are lucky enough to get a second chance. Perseus, the Greek cat, is one of them. The stray feline was taken to a vet in the city of Larissa last year after a terrible accident. The vets had to perform three surgeries, but Perseus lost the same number of limbs. However, he managed to stay alive and was given prosthetic legs. Perseus has adapted perfectly to his new limbs and now uses them to get around. He has also managed to snatch the heart of his saviors as visitors at the clinic where he cured have grown. The Japanese art collective has created a mesmerizing environment in a forest where nature and technology come together. In the mountains of Kyushu in southern Japan, the nature comes to life after the dark. Flowers and trees are illuminated in a glowing ripple shine, while rocks turn colorful with light installations. A waterfall made of light pours gently on a bright rock. Some rocks have calligraphy, and artificial pond projects colorful fish too. The artists behind the work say their aim is to unite technology and nature.
The thing is, sometimes people think it's a digital and nature is completely against each other. But in the same time, we think it's in a digital and the nature is quite easy to merge.
The Japanese team also wants to raise awareness about the original beauty of the nature, which they say is often ignored. To remind people of that, they hold exhibitions combining projections, sound, and carefully designed spaces. So far, the group has organized several art shows of this kind. Animals have been providing protection and service to people since time immemorial. They have not only been the source of food like meat, butter and milk, but also served humans by eating plants toxic to them. Authorities in New York City have taken 24 goats from a nearby farm to the Riverside Park in Manhattan to munch on invasive weeds. They say it's an environmentally friendly win-win for the species removal at the park. The goats get to feast on overgrown bush, and Riverside Park Conservancy doesn't have to dump harsh chemicals on weeds. Park officials say it's both healthy for the goats and good for the environment.
As part of our woodland restoration initiative, 2 years ago, we unleashed a very hungry group of goats into a stretch of the park that had been overrun with invasive plants. And wow, did they exceed expectations. We called it Gotham because we put the goat in Gotham. They chowed down on Japanese knotweed. They noshed on porcelain berry. They snacked on multiflora rose. They easily traversed the hard-to-reach terrain behind me and gulped down poison ivy without even giving it a second thought. Since goats are naturally effective weed whackers, putting them to work in Gotham is like treating them to an all-you-can-eat buffet. It's healthy for the goats, and it's good for the environment. That's farm to table.
People visiting the goats at the zoo say these animals are emotionally intelligent and connect with people. Goats are an ingenious approach to weed removal, eating species dangerous to humans like poison ivy. Of the 24 goats, 5 will call Riverside Park its home through the end of August. For some others, the public can vote to determine which goat will be crowned the greatest of all time. The winner will be announced by the end of the summer.
The Light is a short bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
Singapore unveils one of the world's biggest floating solar panel farms in a bid for quadrupling its solar energy production by 2025. The farm is as big as 45 football fields. It includes 122,000 solar panels. The panels are designed to last for 25 years, and drones will be used to assist with maintenance. The farm is located on a reservoir in western Singapore and will generate enough electricity to power its 5 water treatment plants. It puts Singapore among the few countries in the world with a water treatment system fully powered by green energy. The farm can reduce Singapore's carbon emissions by 32,000 tons annually. Floating solar panels perform up to 15% better than conventional rooftop panels. That's because of the cooling effect of water and that shading from other buildings does not affect them. Singapore is currently developing 4 other floating solar panel projects. Maybe kittens are considered the cutest baby animals by many of us, but just wait to see this baby hippo, which was born during a full moon. The male calf was born in a Mexican zoo last